7 pounds.
Matter of fact, Jack Dempsey, he was once a whole boy. I was in New York when he had that Middle Act Club on Broadway. In 1938, he gave a hobo party regards to race, creed, or color. If you done retired like he was and got rich, anything you invited. Well, it took me that year. I was taking care of two buildings for a room and board. So I wasn't eligible. But I looked at it on TV. They had to be watch part like Grandma used to. Ball in, they had the mulligan stool, and they had the cigarette bus. Thank you. Is it straight?
Yeah.
This really ain't what I want, but it's good.
It'll do.
Water. Yeah, now you see, that's very familiar to me. I've jumped over freight and skin up my knees on them in them rocks.
Yeah.
Well, when I meet the wrong railroad detector.
Uh-oh.
All right, boy, get off. Get off, dude, I'll shoot.
Well, let's make a fine train station right here.
Right? That happened to me in a Kronach called Ohio. I was hoboing the nickel plate. I held the nickel plate down from Fort Wayne, Indiana. And it didn't stop in Cleveland. I'd have gone in Cleveland. Cleveland, big city, didn't look good. But she pulled up in Kronach, Ohio. It must have been doing about 20 miles an hour, and that's too much to get off. And old Kronach swim with them 245. All right, boy, get on. And I shoot. And a little white boy, he skid his knee. Well, I got off, and no hobo would learn me how to fall. I just fell from the boxcar and fell in a ditch, rolled in a ditch. And another one in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Big rain. We was topping that freight, and he come there and say, get on my freight and jump in the river. So we got off the freight. And then I went to Fort Wayne, Indiana. And then that evening I caught the CNEI. That's Chicago in Eastern Illinois. And put him down at Vincent Junction. Then caught the Big Four in Pennsylvania and got into Cincinnati at 12 o'clock that night. I tell you, it was some experience. Well, I had more good days over when I had bad days. I had one bad in my first year, 1931. I went in the way called Georgia Sleep. That cost me 4 months hardly able to take that. I got on. You think that's nothing? But still, the coastline, I got seaboard when I got on. I never missed the coastline anymore. The seaboard, the Georgia Central, the Georgia and Florida, the CNER, the LNN. And that's my train. I leave Miami and I blind a passenger and get off at South Jacksonville and walk close to St. John River. Then I have my overall suit on and now get in the bunch with them expressmen, you know. Now, just kept that passenger train to get around the first blind. River Junction, that was the seaboard road, then heading in back over to New Orleans, Pensacola. Then from there, and then from there to the Alabama line, then on up to Montgomery, then the Big Ham. Yeah, that big yard, boys' yard. And they be cooking, you know, white and black over there, boiling. You know, I just do anything to hobo. He done boiled his black eyes, you know. And he said, hobo, watch my pot of black eyes. He went to some bread. And another freight was coming. Now I'm gonna leave a pot of black eyes. In about 2 months I was in New York in the pool room, you know. And he said, yeah, if you don't believe I'm a hobo, ask that gentleman there where my pot of peas. We had a big laugh, buddy. But I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I'm trying to write a book of it.
Yeah.
But I hobo 10 years and hitchhiked 12.
Yeah.
And, World War II stopped. Our country went in the war, I think it was December the 9th, 1941. So, about a week to Christmas, caught the subway, uptown, a nickel, get to 23rd Street and pay 3 cents and ride a ferry in Jersey City. And I'm getting ready to blind, getting ready to catch a bridge, and I met a long, tall, smiling soldier with a rifle bending on, just wishing to smile. He said, "Well, when the man army, I'll join you going to Florida." He said, "But I got to walk you back to the border." He said, "Have a seat." He said, "I've got 8 hours in, I don't mind keep walking me back." So I went on back to New York. Stayed there till 43, then I went down and started, and I caught the Green Army. But we had to ride to ride to local. It took me 4 days to get to Jacksonville from New York. But I enjoyed it. Everywhere the Greyhound stopped, I'd find some moonshine. I'd give you some moonshine and eat, and I had a good time that way. Yeah, so I'm trying to write a book on that road, boy.
Oh, yeah?
Are
you
going to
be playing with it later on?
Huh?
Are you going to be doing something with it later on?
Well, I come to look at the Gandy Dam.
Who's
yeah, we done did our show, man.
Oh, already did?
I'm gonna look at the Gander now. I've got to dance a little myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, you have a good one.
I mean, they got that fixed up just like the East Coast and them rocks.
Yeah, I guess too.
Paul, when you fall in them rocks off for free, I'm telling you, you was hurt. Oh, I run into some mean railroad detectives.
I guess they work with
slaves. And run into some good ones.
I guess they use different kinds of ballast in different parts of the country, do they?
Hmm?
Different kinds of the ballast, of the gravel. Or they use like granite here. Like some places they use like slate.
Hmm.
Different kind of.
Now, that's why I tell the little kids to stay in school. You see those tools we used to use? And I work hard, 30 of us in a gang, understand that. And that's when they're building a seaboard from Wildwood to Miami. We slept in the cam car. They have all of us out there getting an asthma now. One young man that went to school is sitting up in a $1 million machine building. So how about telling them to stay in school and get them paid? You see, in 1925, the big land boom come on. And them contractors are cleaning up that land, they was paying $7 for everybody black man you get to their field. And we used grubbing holes and axes, but no more. This man say, "I want 100. This man say, "I want 50. All he need now is one man with education. He's selling that machine, and he do more than one day, and 50 of us could do it above. So that's why they better stay in school. And I mean, every time you read the way they're cutting them off. That Pratt & Whitney, that's all close to me in West Palm Beach, they laying off a bunch of people. See, you know, the post office, all over, it done had 3 or 4 shooting in the post office. Man couldn't take it.
Yeah.
Our president, he got his hand full.
When did you start performing?
1946.
Okay. You just picking up yourself?
No, I went to New York to be a drummer. But I run into this famous fella, run that little short chick here about that high. And he was the greatest jazz drummer in the world. And I run to Joe Jones, I run to Gene Krupa, and run all them. So I said, "Well, I'll go in another field." So I used to do a little comedy. So a young man come to the bar where I was working at with one washboard. A lot of little tops on it. The top hat, he said he made a lot of money. So I say like this, I said, "We want to be the best, get something different." So I put two together and went down Mott Street, Chinatown, and got the bill. Those two washboards there, I bought them in 1979. But the original washboard, I did a benefit in 1991 in California. And when I got back, they fell to pieces. So imagine I got them, so those, I'd have them in storage, so I just took the bells off and put on them. You know. And I love it. And I like to make the people
really,
love it.
Washboard Bill's been looking for you.
Hello.
Jason! Jason! Ah, boy. You know, this one's exactly what I want, but it's good for me.
I'm going to thank you serious in a minute.
And do you know what fish do in that stuff?
Huh?
Do you know what fish do in that stuff?
Oh, this is the
best drink in the world, water. But I like that color, all right. You see, gin is that color, and moonshine is that color.
It's an instrument.
Yeah, it's the washboard.
I
want to
see you play it. I missed your performance. I
thought you were going to
perform over here.
No, we don't entertain. I done did my day's work.
You don't?
Yeah, the old man done did his day's work. We had a half hour with him.
You're not going to give us just a little bit? Today, where they
reach? Tomorrow, another half hour. And Sunday, that'll be it. And I'll head for that West Long Beach. Which I hope one day we'll get to where I'll be moving there.
You want to move from Palm Beach? Where you want to move to?
Well, get out that neighborhood. I've got a very bad neighborhood. They broke in my place about a month ago in the daytime. I was in Lake Worth getting my banjo ukulele. Are you off? And so I left. I just locked the door. And I just brought the little things that I've taken before, understand? Like my razor and my clippers and my candy. And I had my $200 bottle of scotch. I brought that. I was out of here. I drink with juice and I drank the last of my beer. After taking all my valuables, they went in the refrigerator, took the last can of beer, took my grapefruit. I brought my flashlight. They take that and had to buy it up. So I just load up and bought the things. So now they want to go in there, they want to take that old TV and that bedroom suit. They're welcome to it. And I left some collard greens for you.
You left them something to eat. You want to sit down?
Hmm?
You want to sit down?
Well, that wouldn't work.
We met these brothers yesterday.
How you do, sir?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. The way y'all dress is making me homesick. I worked on my first railroad in 26. It's Center Hill. It's Center Hill, Florida. They're running the seaboard from Wildwood to Miami. And all that summer, we had camp cars in Center Hill. We get $3 a day, and we take out 45 cents for gold. We have 2.5 left. And rat crawls, my friends, with the juke joint. If we get out check cash, I will check them and see them like about 8 o'clock in the morning. And I will form a Captain Will Warner. And I said, well, I'm going to Bush. So everybody took out Bush and left with one man, and the wages down low. Yeah. Next Saturday, we all go to the bushes. Yeah. Well, I enjoyed that summer. It wasn't on the way around.
Yeah, I remember right away from Frisco, when the farmer grew hot. The farmer got too hot and he went in the bush. And the other boys were there and they went in the bush. I told my husband, somebody got to get out there on the railroad so because that train would be around here.
Now, the other part of 26, the Florida East Coast had that double track that time, 522 miles long. And 7 miles from Fort Pierce was a contractor by the name of Reed and Lowe.
Yeah.
They had the contract. You remember? Well, let me tell you something. And East Coast Charlie was crew hands on Jacksonville. And he's supposed to try, and I was up 21. And we was getting 350 a day and 3 meals and had to fight mosquitoes all night. Now, I was a young fella, I was known to make a week anyway, but I couldn't make it 3 days. We had to fight the mosquitoes. Now, mosquito shorty, we didn't have no money to give it. He bypassed our bunk house. And we had to fight mosquitoes all night. And we're getting 350 and had them mean phones out there. All right, boy, all right, let's go. You get 350. Fight mosquitoes all day, 3 days. And caught East Coast Charlie and went back to Jacksonville. And then he cruised him to Tampa. They went to the cruise line, and guess what they had? You got to wait. Mm-hmm. You got to wait 4 weeks before you can draw two.
Yeah, that's right. When I first went away, you had to wait 4 weeks.
Yeah,
you had to draw two.
You know what I'm talking about? I'm so glad that I could be in Old Town River. Yeah, so I had to wait 4 weeks. Yeah. But that seaboard, your time stopped. Then, and soon it is, the time stops, time you go there. Yeah, so. Yeah. We had them little short billy shovel there in that sand. When I went to the East Coast, they had them picks. But they had rocks just like y'all got that fixed there. That reminds me.
Tapping picks.
You had to go in there with them picks.
Yes, sir.
And all over, and that foreman say, all right, that boy. You're getting much as any man. Let's go. But they fed you good in them. They fed you good in them camp calls. They had them black cooks and they could burn a wall.
What was your title game?
You had good. Good ball out. That paid eco. Get this starchy eyed overall over. That starchy eyed shirt. That jumper. Get a good see. That's my railroad man. Charlie got me railroad man. Those were the good old days.
They are.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. And you remember reading those?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big contract.
Yeah.
Boy, they're paying $350 a day, man. I'm in
free. They do any kind of
I'm just 21. I said, Lord. But them mosquitoes, and that fella just said, that was pure meanness. I told him, I said, man, on my payday come, I was just, oh no, you might be dead then. You got to fight mosquitoes. Them mosquitoes are bad too, around St. Lucie County that time. I made 3 days, and I told him, I said, I can't go to well. He said, go trade it up, went to commissary. Straight up, and I called East Coast Charlie. And that coastline, I'm telling you, about 4 weeks.
You know, the coastline is the cheapest railroad in the South.
Now, I worked a little on the, in the coals in my home, Sanford. Yeah, I worked in the coals there, taking them coals out those gondolas. You know, you make many hours as you want. That was summer. That was summer 27. You get 25 cents an hour in your points. And you didn't have no boss. Your boss was them cars. He put them boss up on top of the
right.
Chute. Man come by and see the night empty. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, you know.
And that was all right. But then, again, in my home, you had to wait 4 weeks. 4 weeks before you draw teams.
How much is getting paid back then?
Good old railroad days.
How much you was getting paid? What the pay was?
Now I was in West Palm Beach.
I worked 10 hours.
And I'm looking at him putting on a cross.
$10 an hour? I mean, $1?
One young man set up that big $1 million machine.
For 10 hours. That's $1 a day.
They had.
Yeah, yeah, I worked 14 days.
They had white and one black.
$14.
That machine go, that's how I got my own pool. I couldn't talk to nobody. One of the old times, I said, look at that. I said, look at that, you get it, man. And since the railroad done got so
used to it,
you can count the blacks.
No.
Yeah. Yes, sir, you can count them on one hand.
Well, I quit out
of it. We had to get out of them days.
When you
were all black.
Well, I was out of my mind.
thing that changed was that people considered that to be hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And they were taught against that. You aren't supposed to do hard work. So this being hard work, or looked like it was hard, they decided, well, no, I'm not going to do this. And not understanding, when you went to railroad, the work that you did, and the work that, when I went to railroad, see, at 17 years old,
mm-hmm.
And we would hire 10 men every morning. Well, by 12 o'clock, you might have one left.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them would have quit. Or they never did tell them, you know, tell the foreman they was quitting. They said, I'm going down here to the bushes. And you didn't see them again. Or they said, well, I'm going to get a drink of water. And you didn't see him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
See? Well, he snuck on off and he would sneak off. See? Well, you take, see the work that we did, and we would do now, you might say, and I'll watch some railroad crew work. We did more in a way in one day than it would take them to do a week, except that they have all the machinery. See? Now they can travel faster, but also I'm finding through observation that machine, in certain instances, in certain locations, can't do that trackage like that man could, especially in a soft spot. And see, that machine has no feeling, no human feeling about it. It's just going along at a set pace. It's going along, it's set a certain way. But that man actually got the feel of what he was doing. And
yes,
he could detect the roadbed, you know. It takes 10 years for a roadbed set up. And no. Or the machine comes on. The machine doesn't know that. So he can't feel the soft spots in that roadbed. But you could.
Now you take, Houston used to be the potato capital, and this farmer say, I need 100 pickles, they come from Georgia all around. This farmer say, I need 75, I need 50. Now they got one man, they got one young fellow that went to school on that machine. And the last time I checked the field, the last potatoes I worked in was 63. I was working in Washington, then I was working in the wash house. So I took a ride out to the field, and I look at this, young man set up on that machine, and he has a black on this side and a black on that side, taking the bags off, putting them on the truck. No, don't need no more 100. And I mean, black people make good money picking up potatoes. The bigger your family was, the more money you made.
Well,
now the same way with that grubbin. You see, I went to 1925, that land boom, and they was paying $7 for every year about a black bag to get to their field. This man said, well, I need 100. And the less you got in 25 was 50 cents a day, 50 cents an hour. And so this man got 100, this man got 50. All needs one man now sitting on that machine. And they call it grubbin no more. Land clearing. We had the old fashioned grubbin holes, the old axe.
The first thing we on the railroad, see, when they upgraded or brought the machine to the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anytime machine, its purpose for being there is to decrease the labor.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there are so many other factors, say, in today's knowledge. See, when we went to the railroad, see, that one, you hadn't heard of anything like health insurance and all this is involved. Well, that increases the cost per hour, the cost or per day cost to the company. Now, so that machine comes in, and that machine eliminates that, you might say.
This machine, like I tell you, kid, y'all stay in school. I didn't get a chance. I didn't have to go to school, but the Lord took the sword around, I made a living. But no more of that. No, sir. That machine took the corn out of your hand and put them on your body.
Well, technology always does that.
In Orange Picture, that was big around Mahone, Sanford, Pocono, all them. They got blown. They blew the oranges out of the tree. We go to bed and pick them up. Oh, boy, this machine, this automation, as they call it. But I will never forget the good old days. Now, the alien end, that's my favorite friend of all, boy, no trouble.
Yeah.
I went all the way to the end of the line from New Orleans to Covington, Kentucky.
I loved you after that.
Yeah.
That's my favorite line. Only. And when you got to Flemington, Junction, Alabama, one hand Kelly, he would tell you, look, don't ride my merchandise, you bums. He told all of them, Kelly would tell you, don't ride my merchandise, take the local. You want to ride the fast freight, you wait till I get off at 12 o'clock, a minute. And other than that, I just ride up and down, catch it in River Junction, Florida, just support Longman Junction. Get off in Birmingham and go have it all 18 and 4. Yeah, right.
You see, where I was real, there was the Crossroad Railroad.
So
you had L&N, Southern, Frisco, Illinois Central, the Cebo, and the Birmingham Southern. All crossed there because the steel mills, see, were just beyond us, and they all serviced the steel mills. So being there around that crossing, that allowed me to see all of them. And, you know, become familiar with all of them, different railroad companies. Now, I can never hope to do no hoboing myself.
Being old?
I said, no, I never did do any hoboing. I said, I couldn't do no hoboing because I don't expect I'd be here today if I hoboed. My mama probably would have did away with me.
I don't know nothing about Alabama.
Yeah. Well, Waycross stopped me from messing with the coastline. I went to Waycross sleep in the coastline. I went in there like the 14th of August. And I got out there the 1st of December. I got off that chick as it went. Could be 4 months hardly. I didn't buy that coastline. But
I was found the coastline.
Or the train you buy yourself.
I have two sisters.
Oh, boy, we rolling in. I see five flashlights and 545. Five of us in there, four boys in Jacksonville.
Really?
All right, boys, get out one at a time. If you run, we'll break a leg.
No, I'll roll all the boys.
I just put me in my hobo. My family didn't care to back about me. And I tried to be a drunkard that was so. A young fellow from Birmingham, like out of whole board, I just like it. That makes me forget about all my family treatment. And I get off the freight and I meet a family. And the people were so nice in the San Diego. A lady would say, I'll say, miss, I'm on the road, I'll cut some wood. So, coming in, son. I got a son somewhere on the road, somebody may be doing that. So, I just enjoy it. Just stuck that coastline.
What they call on that on your son?
You know. I don't know
where he's now, though. Read on that sign. On that sign. On your son.
Not Pensacola. Not Pensacola.
On your son.
She was missing.
What they read me?
That's ukulele.
What are you talking about?
Oh, ukulele. Yeah, that's me. That was painted.
He had a fan club.
Yeah, that was painted. And I had a ukulele club. So I played a little ukulele too.
What does a ukulele look like? I don't know instruments.
And the young man painted both of them. Well, that was painted in 1982 when I was doing a benefit. in West Palm Beach.
Willie, what does a ukulele look like?
The thing you call a little guitar, that little bit of instrument about that long.
Come on, ukulele?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Now, what's the difference between that and a fiddle? A fiddle is about that long, too, isn't
it? There's a big difference. Ukulele, that's something smaller than short.
Yeah, they broke in on me about 5 weeks ago, and I had two in there. Cost $201. They got one. And I left me with one.
I bet they don't even know what to do with them.
I tried to buy one for this group, you know, but these fellas won't do that.
They won't.
Long, yeah. Why you used to see some guitar pickers in the blue days of North Carolina, Texas, Mississippi.
Yeah.
Boy, you see. And you see that old bottleneck.
Yeah.
On
the finger. Take this boy down there. B.B. King.
Yeah.
He's the king of the blues.
Mm-hmm. From Mississippi.
Yeah, he started right there in Mississippi.
Yeah.
B.B. King did?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's from Mississippi.
Oh, I didn't know.
Willie Dixon, he died. He's from Mississippi.
Yeah.
And the Cook family was from Mississippi. Yeah. Sam Cook's family.
Did you know John Hurt?
And Louis Rawl, he's from Mississippi.
Yeah.
We had a lot of talent out in Mississippi. Every president.
Mississippi John.
Yeah. Every president learned how to play in a black Baptist church.
Yeah, who's done every president? Yeah, right there in Cordova. In Cordova, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know Mr. Hurts.
Yeah, Mississippi
turned
awesome guitar player.
John Hurts, you know him?
Yeah.
Mississippi John.
Yeah. His boy died since we had. Since us was up to Lynn Park in Birmingham, he was there, and he died not long ago, then, 71 years old. He was a guitar picker, too. Now, he learned this by himself, and he
self-taught.
Learned off his uncle. And he got to be a professional, but he wasn't like B.B. King. B.B. King was rough.
You like B.B. King?
Yeah,
me too. They put that bottleneck on their finger.
Bottleneck
on the finger.
Uh-huh. You see, Elvis, he was playing the Black Baptist Church.
Yeah.
And one Sunday, he went home with his black friend. And father didn't work all the week. He sat on the porch with that bottleneck on his finger. And Elvis was looking up at him. And Elvis ain't played no more spirits. He went on with the blues.
Yeah, see, he was looking at that fellow sitting on that porch.
He was looking up at him. Man, they could do something with that old bottleneck.
Not until 3:30.
My wife, she did. She went out for this boy, Tom Jones. Boy singing blues, Tom Jones. Mm-hmm. I said, Tom Jones can't do no singing. I said, now every president's gonna run over all of them.
Yeah.
And every president got to be a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
He just went too fast. Too fast.
And I read the story where he cut up his records in that little place in Mississippi. And he went where it was. He went to Memphis, Tennessee on Beale Street.
Yeah.
He went where the blues really was.
Right there where it was.
And he went there and he got his start and he become the millionaire.
Yeah. Maybe they didn't know
who his friend
Elvis
was? B.B. King.
Yeah.
They was just like that.
Yeah, he come through Birmingham.
Elvis and B.B. King?
Yeah.
Elvis and B.B. King?
Yeah, they were friends.
Yeah,
and Jackie Wilson, that was another one of Elvis' friends. When this girl shot Jackie Wilson downtown on 9th Street, Elvis was in California to be by his side.
What?
Yeah, Jackie Wilson's.
And he come through Birmingham on train on the back end. And they held that train up. Them girls around that train. Ooh, he couldn't get to that train. Every day. He was on the way to New Orleans to go out in California. But I sure love to hear him.
And I used to.
Elvis?
I used to meet the young black fellow who was riding for Elvis. I used to meet him to
a
the Palm Cafe in
Elvis
New York. He was riding for Elvis.
A black man?
Yeah, black
fellow. Oh, yeah. He learned off of black.
Yeah, that's right. He learned the Black Baptist Church. Barefooted, overall on his pole.
You remember seeing him, Will?
Huh?
You saw him?
Was he?
You saw him?
Whoever?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, many times. Many times I've seen him. I met him in New York. Yeah, the time he flew down to see about Jackie Wilson.
You saw him there?
Yeah, he come out of Harlem and come to a club run by Jewish people that the celebrities meet there every Wednesday. The Apollo Theater wasn't far from him. And here, yeah, this fella did make some money in the nightclub. Every Monday night, the star at the show, the Apollo, would come there and buy free drinks for people until the place closed. And that's where I met Evelyn, and that's where I met B.B. King. And I met Jackie Wilson there. Of course, I went to Policy Jackie, so I met Jackie there. And
about what year that was?
Hmm?
About what year was that?
Oh, that was in the 50s.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something about that. In 43 and 44, I was in high school, but I played in a jazz band. That the song Hound Dog, Junior, now a blues singer, a black girl from Mississippi named Big Mama Maybell. She was singing Hound Dog even then. And then that was Gate Mouth Moore. You know, he later on became a preacher and
had
one
of his cups. Yeah, but was a big liar.
Oh, yeah, he was a big liar because he owed me $400 now.
Gave my boy.
My mother let me go off in the summer of 45 on the Sammy Green show. You know, they traveled around Memphis show.
Yeah.
They traveled around and played with Ringling Brothers Circus and all over, you know, and the Heath shows. Yeah, I could go and stay the summer, but I had to be back home the 1st of September. And she let me go off with Gate Mouth Moore. Gate Mouth then was playing on with Sammy Green out of New Orleans. And it's gonna, you know, it featured in Ebony in the 60s, or Hortense to Bobby Allen, the world's greatest shake dancer. See, Hortense taught me in the 40s. See, now I'll show you how the elderly people. I was just a boy, 14, 15 years old. Okay. She told me that my mother was intended for looking for her to take care of me. Now, I had to stay with her whenever we stopped on the road. She would not allow me to stay with none of the other girls. I had to stay in the same room with her. And she would run all the other girls away from me. And she still acted as my mother. Well, how I got into that was through the boy that in 1937, when they paid off the World War II bonus. See, a boy named Mr. Swanigan, a modest one, he bought his boy a trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
I learned to play the trumpet from Modi. Then when I went to Dr. Reed, Waymond Reed, he taught a band at the elementary school, so I learned to play the trombone and the tuba, and then I played the bass drum.
Oh boy.
Then when I went to high school, I wasn't going to play one of those things.
Well, them good old days when
my mama bought me an alto saxophone.
Yeah.
I was working at the grocery store for $3 a week, and she bought me an alto saxophone, so I learned to play the saxophone, the alto, and the clarinet. Then I changed, being a wood reed, wind instrument, I learned to play the tenor saxophone. But Modi got drafted in the army, so he came home on a furlough. And at that particular time, he was playing with Tiny Bradshaw. Bradshaw. Well, Erskine Hawkins.
Erskine Hawkins.
Yeah, Erskine and Tiny and Reed and the guy that's head of the Jazz Hall of Fame now. All of them were friends, so my mother let me go with Modi to Kansas City to play with Tiny Bradshaw. And that's where I met a whole lot of musicians in there.
That's right. Yeah, I was in New York when Erskine made his first appearance at the Apollo. He first sang with the Bama State Collegian.
That's where he started in Montgomery.
Bama State Collegian.
Yeah.
And he came to Apollo with that hot band. And everybody was calling the 20th Century Gable. I was there, and that Apollo stayed packed all day. I stayed and got the whole four shows.
But down there in the Junction,
the Hawk. When
Erskine came up, you know, from like it's down Alabama State, when Erskine them came down there in the junction, see, and like you said,
you know that boy got bunny.
Really?
Oh yeah.
House on Full Street. He was with Erskine.
Yeah.
Our stars, all our black stars, is gonna come out of Parlor.
Yes, sir.
And that's how I got a chance to meet a lot of them.
So, Will, the white people came to the Apollo back then?
Mm-hmm.
Did the white people come to the Apollo back in there?
Who?
The white people.
My goodness.
See, you know, it's something strange about music.
Yeah.
You don't know colors.
Integration.
Yeah, they come.
You don't know colors. You know, I was going to Chicago.
Yeah.
And that was my first time. I got on the train and the Grand Ole Opry turned out at Nashville. Well, I always liked country and western music, see? Because where I was reared in Birmingham, I was reared in an Italian community. I learned to speak Italian before I learned to speak English.
Really?
Yeah. So, but you know.
Wait a minute. How you get in an Italian?
Birmingham was one of the most integrated places you ever seen.
Alabama?
Yes, ma'am.
They certainly try to wipe out that memory.
Well, see, being in an industrial complex, the company looking for some labor, some production, and the company established houses, camping, you know, different locations. Company don't care who stay where and what street you stay on. The company wants production. If you working in the coal mine, the company wants some coal. If you working in the oil mine, the company wants some oil.
Mm.
If you're working in that plant, the company wants some iron.
Yep.
See? So they established those quarters. This is Birmingham around the outlying areas of a lot of communities. See? Okay, so it didn't matter. The company had their own law enforcement. See? It didn't matter. You see, law enforcement said, like this municipality, if that was the company's property line out there at that street, he couldn't come in here. Company got their own law enforcement.
Oh, yeah?
See? So now, if you live in Muscola, or Winona, or East Gouda, or Mogul, or Pratt City, or whatever. Now, the area where he lived now, where I was reared, was Pratt City. See? Now, that was an old prison mine.
We had a real star come out of Macon, Georgia.
It didn't make any difference. But music don't know. No. See, when I was playing, I'll show you. Now, there's a place called Cumming, Alabama.
Cumming.
Yeah. Man, I went to Cumming. We used to go to Cumming every Friday night. Okay. Now, they were saying that blacks, you know, wasn't supposed to come to Cumming, but the guy would book us. We'd go to Cumming. We played in this barn, big old barn. It was all three times bigger than this tent here. And what he would do,
hey, you remember?
He would take up some line.
You remember the old black
across halfway the barn.
Under the tent?
See? Now, the whites danced on this side of the line. The blacks danced on this side of the line. That was until intermission. Intermission, he brought in 10 jugs, gallon jugs, of white lightning. And he would walk down that line, and he would turn it up there like you see the Snuff Smith coming. He would turn that, see, it's a way to drink lightning out of a jug. You just don't just turn it up.
It's
not to it.
I never drunk it myself,
and
but I saw
you got to wrap it around
your
hand and lay it on the back of your hand here. Lay it on the back of your wrist. See, you put the thing in it, and you sort of tip that jug over and let it lay back here. See? And then you bring up and you take a swallow. Now, he take a swallow out that jug. He put that jug over there. Once that fellow over there take a swallow, you take this jug and bring that same jug over here and let him take a swallow over here. And that jug goes all the way down the line until it's empty. Then he starts another jug, the same way, until all of the 10 jugs. Now, when he gets about that seventh jug, everybody in there is drunk.
Smell whiskey will make you drunker than drinking.
Then, let me show you, now, this is where the integration came about.
Yeah.
And everybody got drunk, and we had a boy named George Stubbs played the piano. He played piano, blues. And George would play the blues, and he played on the piano, and on the piano, man, he can make the piano talk. And once that music started after that animation, you didn't know who everybody wasn't on line. Everybody did. But, you know, I have some interesting things that happened, you know, in my childhood. So, See, being reared in the community, all of, we were the only small children, say growing children like you children in the community. Next door was a school teacher, Mrs. Wolfhoff, and her husband was a barber. They were black. But around behind us on the side stayed the Mackies. They were prize fighters. And they had one sister named Gertrude. Now all of my playmates were Italian. Even today I talk to several of them now. And but the only somebody I knew, you know, in my age bracket, say then, was Sam, Carlos, Charles, Nick, and when your mother left home, she carried you across the street to their house. When she left home and went to the store, you know, they brought Nick them across the street to our house. See? And see, I said the times predicted that. Everybody was struggling. See? And it's only the good times when folks get sophisticated and don't get up on themselves. But that was a common crisis. See? And the common crisis was everybody's trying to survive. So I didn't know anybody. I learned Italian, how to speak Italian from them. Okay. Now, when I was 6 years old, when we were going to the movie, we went up the train tracks to the movie. And when they told me I had to go upstairs, I didn't understand that. See, I was 6 years old, and I didn't understand it. See? So after they told me that, I wouldn't go upstairs. Well, I ran in the theater and hid. Well, they had to turn the lights on to find me in there, because I was the funny to see. So when they found me, then they had a beat cop up there. Everybody knew him in the neighborhood named John Henry. John Henry asked me, whose boy was I? I said, whose boy are you? What's your mama's name? I said, Kelly. What's your daddy's name? That's my dad named Seabright. He said, well, you can't go on the show with these boys no more. See? So I ran, I cried, went all the way home. See? And my mother asked me, she said, boy, what's wrong with you? I said, what's wrong with you? And I told her what had happened. And she just told me, she said, Lord, boy, I didn't tell you. That's all she said. Now, when I went to school that September, we went to South Pratt School, which was two little duplex houses down by the creek. Up in Pratt was this brick school where the white kids go. Well, naturally, Charles and Nick and Joe and all of them went up in Pratt. I went down there. So I came home again. And I told my mother, I said, Charles, Nick, they don't go to school. Because they were in school today. And then she told me, she said, boy, you go where I sent you. And said, you didn't question your parents.
Right.
See, the discipline, that's what I say. Discipline then is different from discipline today.
Yeah. See, and you can tell the difference in the behavior.
Yeah, you didn't question your parents. You accepted whatever they said. I'll show you how history repeats itself. In 62 or 63, my older sister lived in Ohio. She came home to Birmingham on the train. I carried my baby sister there, rode to the train station with my mother to meet her. The train was 45 minutes late. So we went up, we're going up on the platform there. We were coming back down the steps. She skips down the steps, skip, and she wasn't, I guess, tingled in, was about 5, 6, maybe 1 or 6 years old. She hops down the steps, skip. She goes into the white side of the waiting room and she sits down. See? Now, what am I to tell her?
See? Did you tell her?
I didn't tell her. I did just like my mama did me. I went in there and I sat down beside her. And, you know, that's where the people grab and they grumble, they got up off the bench and they say, so what? So see, then it came to me what to say to her.
What'd you say?
I said, Tina, let's go around there and see what my dear doing. I ain't told her that you was on in the white. She said that my mom didn't tell me nothing about the black and white then. And that's what I said. Birmingham, whether, you know, contrary to what they say or what is written.
Really? Because I thought that
you
that
go
was
through
one of the most
Birmingham right now, I can show you the neighborhood. You find whites living right here, blacks living next door. You find whites on the back, blacks on the black. You find it's according to the location. It being in an industrial town, and over there at Sloss Run is where we perform or do some of it. There were some quarters. It's you might say entity, manufacturing entity, had its own living quarters. See? Mm. So Sloss headquarters, Republic headquarters, U.S. Steel headquarters, wasn't U.S. Steel then, it was PCI, Tennessee Coal and Iron Railroad, headquarters all everywhere.
So the quarters weren't integrated?
Huh? Yeah. See, you might have two black persons staying in this house, you might have two white persons. Like I said, the company was interested in production. So if they had a vacant house, they hired an employee and they had a vacant house. Okay, where is the house? The house is between two black families. If you want to work for the company and you need a job, you get in that house there. They assign you to that house. Well, you didn't pay, I think what they put in was about $4 a month or $2 a month, something like that.
$4 a month?
Yeah.
And I thought you was working.
But you think even in 47, when I started working on the railroad, I graduated in high school on Friday night and I started working on the railroad on Monday morning.
Yeah, I lived in the house.
And I was 17 years old, but you think even then, we made 44 cents an hour. Yeah, 44 cents an hour.
And you could pay for it by a week.
When I started?
Yep.
Oh man, that was more money I had seen. I thought I was in the book. 61 cents an hour.
I make 61 cents an hour.
And like I tell
they got a heap of raises then.
What year that was?
44, 45.
When the Titanic sunk.
You get to be there 2 years, they get a 2 cent raise.
I was making 25 cents a day at that big sawmill.
In a big sawmill.
$1.50 a week, but you know what I could do? I get that $1.50 and feed all us out there.
Oh, yeah, man.
Man, you could get 2 cents worth of rice, yeah. 3 cents worth of bacon.
And let me tell you,
wait a minute, I want to ask y'all about, right. You said when World War II was over, they paid somebody something?
World War I. They paid a bonus.
They paid a bonus. They paid a bonus?
Yeah.
He was a head block, he's getting a dollar, about
$300 or so. Yeah. But it was paid in 1937. Boy, that was a heap of money.
Yeah, 10 cents a day.
Oh, man.
You knew about rich.
I know, that's right.
But the thing about it, you got the little money, but you could do something with it.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Now, like I tell people, I hobo from Lackey 1 in New York to New York City. And I got to Jersey City and didn't have 3 cents to come across the ferry from Jersey to New York. So a young man brought me and my buddy across. He stopped at 23rd Street. He said, well, I don't get paid like we do down home on Saturday, get paid on Monday. He told her, hot dog man said, get him 2 hot dogs apiece all the way. Well, now, when you make a hot way all the way, then when one mouth could bite that, that's my mother-in-law mouth. See, my mother-in-law mouth was so big, she could whisper in her own air. And he put them 4 hot dogs all the way, and we got, each one of us got 2 pints of root beer. He handed the man a quarter, the man handed him a nickel. He said, it's 5 cents apiece. Now, you know what you could do in 1932? What you got for $10? Now, what you got for $1, you can't get enough for 10.
No way.
You can get 20 hot dogs all the way for $1 and 20 pints of root beer. Now, what one hot dog cost you now?
Let me tell you something. My mama sent us to the store. My daddy made a wagon. It's a double harness wagon. And I had two big old German Shepherd dogs.
Uh-huh.
That was a double team wagon. It was about as long as this table. He made the harness and all. And the two dogs pulled the wagon. My sister and I were getting in the wagon. My mother gave us the note to go to the commissary. That's the company store. See? And give us $2. Mm-hmm. And with that note, you go to the commissary, and the wagon is full when you come out.
Yeah.
I'm sitting up here.
That's right.
With the harnesses in my hand, the ropes in my hand to guide the dogs. And we did that, I guess, for about 6 months. The last one day, we were coming home, and I got almost home, man. Close here to that tent over yonder. And a cat come across them dogs. Them dogs empty out the wagon, tore the wagon up and everything. See? And that's what he ended up sending us to the commissary with that. And no, he had trained those dogs the same as you trained two horses.
We messed up $2.
We went to New York, and then the New Yorkers didn't
and
know.
And that was just like messing
know.
Up $200. Worth.
We go to one of them Jews, fish store in
the wagon was
on the
table.
Wide.
See, you made
please
everything.
Me.
That's where you could.
I walk in there looking sad with a dime.
You made everything.
Would you
and
please
you take a wheel and
fish head
and you take a piece iron, you make the axle.
Little group of fish head throw in there. He said, well,
your blacksmith thought that stuff.
Here's a penny onion, you know,
and you made the hundred. Oh, he was hitched up there like in the dog, hitched up there like in it. Double team.
2 pounds of rice for a nickel.
You know, it's a blacksmith.
Go to the bigger shop and get 2 loaves of day old bread for a nickel.
I saw some.
Man, we get together put on a pot. So moonshine was 15 cent a half. 25 cents a pint.
That's right.
And man, we get a dollar.
You get a mini half pint.
We live all day, like. Mm.
Well, you brother, know, I made a song.
Then was the good old days.
By that time, said nickel was for me.
Yeah.
Dime was for law. Mm. I would have got more, but the time is too hard.
That's right.
But you take.
You want to eat?
If you went
you
got
you.
A dime of pork chops, a nickel of sugar,
and
you take a dime of meal,
a nickel of anything,
15 cents of flour. Sure, you had the whole wagon thrown in the box.
Yeah, nickel of anything.
Yeah, three bunches of greens for a nickel.
They got some collard greens and barbecue.
They got some good soul cooking over there.
What's over there?
But also, my mother was down. She give you that $2. And see, it was practical mathematics. You had to learn how to count.
Did you eat? Did you eat? Did you
I'm gonna go over yonder and take a look at that stand over yonder.
Well, he's gonna get this golf cart here, and we're gonna ride over here and over here and see what they got to eat. How about that?
Okay.
You ready to go?
Yeah.
Let's all get it. Watch out, him. Elder not gonna walk around over here.
Oops, I'm sorry. You ate?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you eat?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. You ate?
Gonna bring
you
something?
Yeah, I know. You did? Okay, we're gonna go over here and get him something to eat.
Okay.
Then we'll continue our meeting when we get back.
All right.